Freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thanks for joining us today. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, and how to defend against threats to our republic. Folks, we want to engage members of our armed forces, veterans, first responders, and the patriots who support them in their noble professions. Also, your support is important to us. Please support us at patriotcoalitionlive.com/support. Weekly episodes are available Tuesday mornings wherever you get your podcast, places like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio, or you can find us at patriotcoalitionlive.com. If you'd like to see this podcast in video, you can find us at patriotcoalitionlive.com or at rumble.com. That's RUMBLE.com, which is the uncensored alternative to YouTube. Okay, are y'all ready?
I am.
All right, let's do this. Okay, title of today's episode is From Subjects to Sovereigns, Who's the Boss? I like that, yeah. Jason said, it's a great title, Jason. That's all you, buddy. How we the people, this is basically how we the people made the transition from subjects under, you know, King George in England. Now, the word sovereign loosely meaning the person or body with all the political power in a government. Okay, so let's set the stage. We want to preface it with this. There's a lot of insanity going on right now. It's December 11th, 2020. There's election fraud going on. If you listen to CNN, the Chinese news network, they'll say there's no election fraud. And when they do it, they'll say there's not that much election fraud. Okay, it's going on. A former Vice President Biden, the pseudo, meaning so-called president-elect, has been basically caught soliciting payments from the Chinese through his son, which at a minimum compromises his ability to act in America's best interest. Now, since he's working through this through his son, Hunter, does that make him a subcontractor or just simply a foreign agent for China, a subcontracting foreign agent? Our elected officials are arguing about how much money they can give away for financial unconstitutional stimulus while unconstitutionally restricting movement of citizens in such a way that puts us almost under house arrest under the guise of it's for your own good due to COVID. Reminds me of what Reagan said, the nine most terrifying words in the English language you'll ever hear are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. They're doing all this stuff because it's good for me. I don't want to get started on that. We are not yet done with the presidential election process, and we only have about two more days until the electors are supposed to cast their ballot. And some states are trying to make vaccines mandatory and even require you to carry vaccine cards, which I refuse to do. So don't know if you're going to carry one, Jason.
I don't think so. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
That was okay. For those of you who know Jason Marocek, he will not. okay, he will not. And I've already reached out to my congressman and legal counsel, literally at lc.org, libertycouncil.org, and I am prepared to face that consequence. And everybody, hey, be ye warned. Okay, if you want your freedom and liberty, you have to fight for it. You have to stand up. So understand this, folks. If you don't have a firm understanding, or at least a better understanding, of how our nation was founded, why our nation was founded, and the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, this insanity we are seeing in 2020 will continue, which is a threat to our republic and our individual sovereignty. The big takeaway from today's episode is this. We, the people, you and I, are the sovereigns. We, the ones who collectively, individually make up the power, the political power of our government. We're the ones in charge of the nation. What power the government has over us we gave it to them, or we allowed them for different reasons, either apathy or ignorance or lack of mm-hmm. education, we allowed them to take powers outside of their authority without consequence. And we can take it back and do it constitutionally. As we said in previous episodes, because this is kind of if you're catching up with us now, that's great. Glad to have you. We suggest for you to get to know us starting with episode one. So you can catch up here because we kind of have a sequence of, events, if you will, or that so
almost
that we
like
can hit
a curriculum, right? We're trying lay out the story of America and our liberties with them, right?
I love the way Jason said the story of America, I love it. So you're welcome to join in anytime, but when you listen to the podcast, episode from episode one to today, it'll help you just get the bigger picture. But as we said in previous episodes, this podcast is meant to be a timeless resource. So Jason, a little recap so far.
Yeah, no, and you gave a great segue because as we have covered in previous episodes, we try to impart an understanding of not just, starting from the Declaration of Independence, bam, we popped into existence, but what was it that led up to that? And so through a couple episodes prior, we talked about some of these concepts, but just to kind of quickly recap, the concepts that the framers used to inspire the Declaration of Independence and all mm-hmm. those liberties that we espouse in there. It really came from this concept that John Locke in his second treatise, he sort of encapsulated the idea. And that is that God created us, every man equal, that no one was in a position of power over another and they didn't have any sort of extra special dominion.
Yeah, so our rights didn't come from a government. It came
That's
from
right.
God.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly right. And because of that, each of us is responsible for, running our own lives and living accordingly, with the exception right. that because God gave us life, liberty, and property, no one can take that away from us. And these are the basic fundamentals that led the framers to craft our Declaration of Independence and government that way. But if that's the case, then it almost begs the question. So what happened? Why, after we were created, did we go through so many centuries where, we were essentially subjugated? We were subjects of some sort of despot, some sort of monarch, ultimately leading to, England, who we eventually broke off from, or that they separated from us. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the question of how did we get to this position where we were subjects, one day, and then the next we were sovereign. Yep. So we kind of have to, in order to do that, we have to remember what was the status of the colonials at the time. In just pre War of Independence, we were subjects. We were subjects of the crown, subjects of King George III, of Great Britain. So that's kind of the stage that we're starting from. The pre-war area, era. Mm-hmm. But we kind of have to take a look at what it was like in Europe at the time. And so this concept of European feudal sovereignty is mm-hmm. what we started from. And so you're probably familiar, if through your public education, private education, homeschool, whatever, the concept of divine right of kings.
Every time I hear that phrase, divine right, it just bothers me so much because someone is twisting and corrupting religion for selfish and tyrannical purposes. It's just divine right.
No, you're right. And the definition, for those of you maybe have forgotten or gone on to other things in life, is essentially where a king, queen, some sort of monarch declares that their authority was granted to them by God and that they are in charge of everybody in their dominion because God has ordained it and is essentially ruling through that entity. So that's what the divine right of kings was. And and this concept popped up probably the Middle Ages, all the way through, middle of the 17th century in England, where we eventually, came from, or at least, the founders and the colonists. So we start from this whole concept of divine right and kings in Europe. And then around 1215, or exactly 1215, the Magna Carta is kind of thrown down. And this is, you know, this is, like I said, 1215, where the...
It's not a time, it's a date. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah, 1215, not just ago. After you eat lunch, but 1215, you know, AD. So the Magna Carta, if you remember, is a document. At this point, the document is essentially the subjects saying, look, we do have some inherent rights. We have some rights that the monarchs need to respect. And we're not getting that respect, and we need to make sure that we get that. And so they drew up this, it's a charter of their liberties that the king or queen had to respect. Mm-hmm. And it essentially introduced Parliament into England, you know, to be specific. So at that point forward, they had some representation in the government to sort of, to look after their rights.
If we could touch quickly on that, understand that these great events, it was 800 years ago and change, but it didn't just happen in a vacuum. People had to speak up. It takes people who are active in their government, you know, so a lot of people, just it's human nature to just not push, but someone had to say, hey, this isn't right. We can have a better life, which is what we need to do and what Jason and I are doing right here, right now.
Yeah, no, thanks, Matt, for that. That's a good analogy. And so starting from this Magna Carta document, over time, it was almost the precursor to the subjects starting to ensure that their rights were protected a little bit more, even though there was still a monarch and they were still supposedly sovereign, at least that's the way they acted. The Magna Carta was kind of the stake in the ground that said, okay, over time, we're going to start taking back some of these more inherent, natural rights over time. So underneath all of these concepts, underneath, you know, the divine right of kings, underneath these, you know, the Magna Carta, as I said, these monarchs were still sovereign. At least that's the way they were acting. And so now we introduce this concept called allegiance and protection. And allegiance and protection is an ancient principle that is tied together. On the one hand, you have a sovereign, and then on the other hand, you have the people who are in a part of a government. And the sovereign is responsible for protecting those in his charge, and vice versa, those who are living in that nation are responsible and owe allegiance to the sovereign. It's a symbiotic relationship, and it can't be severed.
It was kind of like the deal. It was an understanding.
Yeah.
It's like, you can be my king or queen, and I will go to war or send my kids to war, but you need to protect us.
Yeah. It was a deal. If I'm going to give you allegiance, you're going to give me protection, and vice versa. So this concept of allegiance and protection had been around, you know, it was exercised in Europe all the time. Like every king, queen recognized this, and the people did as well. And in fact, in that time, the subjects were considered to be tied to the soil, is the phrase that they use. Mm-hmm. And this concept meant that, you know, once you were a part of a nation, once you were born there, that's where you existed. That's where you were a citizen of, until such time as the sovereign allowed you to leave, if they did, right?
How about that? But you can't leave your state or country. Sounds former Soviet Union.
Yeah, to a degree. And we do have to remember that, you know, absolute monarchs before the parliaments, and even after, they ruled with a, you know, pretty much an iron fist, what their will was, and that's why they were sovereign.
It's interesting you say that, because Stalin, that name actually means man of steel, you know, like man of iron. So it's that's what it means. It's man of steel.
Right. Yeah. So this concept of allegiance and protection, it's not just something that, you know, it's been something that's been written about, right? In the Bible, even Apostle Paul referred to the allegiance and protection three times. In the Declaration of Independence, we refer to the concept of allegiance and protection, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. So again, this concept of allegiance and protection is what underpinned the relationship between sovereigns and subjects. It was, again, mm-hmm. it was one didn't go without the other. And it is still that way today. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and how it's changed. And again, the thing that's changed, as we mm-hmm. kind of hinted at in the subject, is the sovereign. The sovereign changed.
Mm-hmm.
So let's now jump to pre-War of Independence. So in America, or in the colonial era, and just prior to the War of Independence, we were engaged, well, not we, but the British and the French mm-hmm. were engaged in the French and Indian War. And this was between 1754 and 1763.
So about 9 years, just about 9 years there. Expensive
right.
war.
Yeah. And it was, even though it was 9 years here, it was essentially a different theater for the war that was called the 7 Years' War in Europe, where the same two belligerents, France and England, were going at it. They just mm-hmm. happened to open up a front here in North America that almost was not even tied to, you know, the conflict there. There was no reason. And this is part of the frustration of the colonists, as you'll hear, mm-hmm. is that there was no reason for them to be, you know, involved in that. So in this conflict, you know, King George II, they resolved it. You know, the war ended, and what that left was a huge amount of debt for England mm-hmm. because of what their efforts, you know, their war in Europe, as well as their war in North America. They had lots of debt to pay.
And if you've ever, you younger folks have read the book Hamilton or listened to any of the songs, but Hamilton by Lin-Manuel Miranda, it was, you know, I've got a daughter and she got us into all those. It's quite historically accurate. And when he talks or sings about, you know, to keep paying for King George's wars, this is what we're talking about.
That's exactly right. No, it's exactly right. So when King George III takes over from his father, he realizes he's got to pay back all these debts. And so, mm-hmm. well, look at that. There's 13 colonies over here that aren't really paying their fair share. Yeah, we can maybe just tax them a little bit. And so King George III, he implemented taxes, you know, different acts like the Currency Act, the Sugar Act, the Quartering Act, Stamp Act, Townshend Act.
Quartering Act. Hold on. What's the Quartering Act? Ooh, this is...
Yeah, that's
get
where,
you go, guys.
That's where the colonists gave quarters to the king. No,
that'd be two pence. Would that be two pence?
No. So the Quartering Act, and maybe some of you remember this from your history in school, but this is where this is a way for the king to save money instead of having to house his troops, you know, building barracks or housing them, you know, in inns or whatever. Mm-hmm. If they needed someplace to stay, they would just say, "Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Johnson, mm-hmm. You now have two soldiers that you have to house, you know, and to feed and to, you know, make sure that their needs are taken care of." So they were, it would be like, oh yeah, the, you know, 1st Battalion, 23rd Infantry is going to descend on, you know, Orlando, Florida, and everyone's going to take a few soldiers, right? Yeah. It's a little bit of a burden. So
it's also a way to oppress your people. Because in fact, it's written in our Constitution, maybe Jason, you can expand on this, that we shall not enact U.S. troops on American soil unless we're attacked.
In fact,
that's why we have state militias.
Yeah. The quartering. I think it's the Third Amendment deals with the quartering of troops and that they cannot be quartered in our homes. So all of these acts to raise money or to save money, the king just implemented on all the colonists, and you know this caused a lot of resentment because again, they weren't part of the war. I mean, other than the fact that some of their citizens were part of the military and fought in it, there was no mm-hmm. reason for them to be fighting here, and so. Mm-hmm. It wasn't their cost. Certainly they weren't fighting over in Europe. And mm-hmm. so it built a lot of resentment with the colonists. And because of that, they started to protest. And King George III, I don't think he took, challenging his authority very well because as the colonists began to start, you know, protesting, he began mm-hmm. implementing more and more punitive actions. It was kind of like this conflict, not a war, but a conflict that began to build and build and build. And it just seemed to increase in intensity, right? So
he was putting pressure on them, you know, putting thumbscrews down, little by little.
Every time that we were protesting or complaining, he would retaliate with something. And so it just basically escalated. And these were the reasons. So you know about the 27 grievances in the Declaration of Independence, where we list all the reasons why we were fighting and maintaining our independence. These are the reasons that we put in the Declaration of Independence. Mm-hmm. So as you may remember, it all reached a boiling point on March 23rd, 1775. And this is actually when, this is the pre-boiling point. This is when Patrick Henry, gave his speech, where he says, give me liberty or give me death. And it's actually a pretty tremendous speech. If you haven't, we'll put it on our show notes, but it's pretty inspiring. So he gives us, give me liberty and give me death, because he says, look, we're basically already at war with them. Mm-hmm. We just don't know it yet. And so, as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
In fact, the boiling point Jason's talking about is March 23rd, 1775 in Massachusetts, where the first shots were fired, known as the shot heard around the world. Now,
So April 19th on the Boston Commons. So that's you're exactly right. So the shot heard around the world, that is the boiling point. Yeah.
Now the question is, why were the British there? What were they going there for? You ready for this? To confiscate weapons. Okay, a true tyrant, oppresses its people and takes away their weapons. Okay, so that's why so many people who are hot and bothered about, don't mess with my Second Amendment rights, because guess what? They read history. Okay, so.
One of the first things that King George III did when he realized that things were getting out of control is we don't want them to have any weapons. So, that's exactly right.
And by the way, for those of you who are American citizens, including naturalized citizens, because if you become a naturalized citizen, you're now a brother or sister citizen. This is something that you should be proud of, that we stood up to bullies at the cost of many lives, of blood and treasure. And that's part of the American heritage, which
sure
I'm very proud to be a part of. And Jason and I both served in the military. We stood on the line. And for those of you who are listening, you might be teenagers right now. You got a great future ahead of you and a great cause to be a part of. For those of you who are veterans, we thank you. We salute you. And we appreciate you. Note the quality salute. Don't give a funky salute. You see it on video, because actually salute.
Sometimes it's TV shows and movies.
Oh my God,
I just cringe every time.
Yeah.
So the boiling point, the shot heard around the world. Mm-hmm. Little did the colonists know that this next sequence of events was going to turn this concept of European feudal sovereignty on its head. It would change it forever. So that kind of brings us to, the War of Independence. It's funny because Matt and I, we went back and forth on this just to talk about the concept, but this idea that the Revolutionary War, it's in history books and it's commonly referred to as Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. Our catchphrase here is it's the Revolutionary War that never was.
And to that point, I tell my kids, guys, question what I say. I'm your parent, and the Bible says honor your father and mother, and that, of course, it's in the Bible. It's right. But your children, I teach my kids, you should question me, your education, because that's the Socratic method. Is they teach you answer a question with a question, and the word Revolutionary War is a misnomer. The Revolutionary War depicts, the word revolutionary depicts the colonists as usurpers and belligerents, similar to Marxist revolutionaries. And it ticks me off, because there are people within certain organizations that have aligned themselves with Marxist ideologies. And Karl Marx is not really the father of communism, because the idea of communism, a form of tyranny, has been around for millennia. But communism, okay, and Karl Marx kind of packaged it and he retailed it, okay? And he made it so it's easy, and he said it so it's easy to influence the common man. And he made it easy and packaged it well so that tyrants or potential tyrants could leverage this ideology to oppress people. So when you say Revolutionary War, it is really easy for enemies of liberty and enemies of our republic to say, well, we were revolutionaries before. No, we weren't. Okay. We were freedom-loving people who stood up to a bully. Okay. The fact is we were victims of tyranny. We stood up to the world's most powerful nation in the world so we could be free. It was thousands of acts of great courage and resilience in the face of seemingly insurmountable odds. And history also showed that God seemed to have intervened on multiple occasions, which we'll talk to on some other episodes. But understand that the phrase revolutionary war is actually a misnomer. Okay. Yeah. It was the war of independence.
Yeah, it's a great distinction, and we're pretty, as Matt says, we're kind of sticklers about that, right? Because we weren't revolting; we were standing up for our rights, and in fact, we didn't at that point. We didn't want to be independent. It wasn't something that we wanted. We just wanted our rights to be respected. You know, for example, we didn't want them to take our weapons from us. We said, "No, these are our weapons," and we kind of drew a line there. So,
yeah. Speaking of drawing a line, and this is why I got involved, guys. I love liberty. I love peace. I love peace. But when you cross the line and you get into my mess, you get into my liberty and my freedom. You have woken the Leviathan. Yeah. And there are a lot of Americans out there, two people who love liberty and freedom, who don't know what to do. Speak up, get involved. And both Jason and I are willing. We have been willing. We volunteer the military. So we were ready to give our lives for the idea of liberty and freedom. And not just for us, but for our allies. Now think about that. A lot of you are afraid of getting unfriended on social media. Well, here's news for everybody. I don't give up, okay? Because this is for 12 years old and above, okay? Obviously, I'm passionate about this, and you need to be too. You know what? You might be the leader we're looking for. We might be the leaders you're looking for. We might be the leaders we're looking for. Fact is, take action. That spirit and that love of freedom and liberty is a part of our American heritage, and it should live through you. It lives through us, and we're giving as best we can.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly right.
The fight continues on today in this moment.
As you can tell, don't mess with Matt's liberty. You don't want to do that.
I'm ready.
I know you are. Yeah, it's fantastic. So this concept of not being a revolutionary war. So, okay, wait a minute. What is it then? Why do we call it that? And how did we end up separating from Britain? Well, again, it gets back to this concept of allegiance and protection we were just talking about. In fact, in the Declaration of Independence, there's paragraph 25. It says he, meaning King George III, has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. There's that phrase, out of his protection. He says that we are out of his protection. And the reason, again, you're asking yourself, what do you mean he said that we're out of his protection? Well, in 1775, the Parliament, with the king's assent, issued the American Prohibitory Act of 1775.
So if you guys, and when you talk about in school, tell me about prohibition. You can answer with the question, which one? The Prohibitionary Act of 1775 or of 1919,
right?
You know, prohibition in the 20th century, because that was the first American prohibition.
I would argue the original was probably more important.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, so this American Prohibitory Act of 1775, it basically said, in part, all manner of the American colonies' trade and commerce is and shall be prohibited, and that any ships found trading shall become forfeited to His Majesty as if the same were the ships and effects of open enemies.
Think about that, guys. Yeah. He's basically saying, if you can get it, take it, and it belongs to, and basically, if I'm a sailor and, heaven forbid, Army beat Navy, by the way. Sorry, beat we had Navy. To put that in there. The Army-Navy game is tomorrow. We couldn't not put that in there. It just is in there. That and my love of freedom and liberty. So basically, the king is saying, if you see an American ship on the ocean, you have my permission as the king and the sovereign okay? To take it, take whatever you want, and you'll have to, of course, pay a tax. You know, that's kind of how it works. And he's giving permission to everybody who's a subject of, you know, of England at the time to take whatever they want that's on the sea. And that is basically a declaration of war. It's not only his forfeiture of his, or rather his ceasing of protection, but it's a declaration of war by fiat. You know, when I say, a lot of people don't understand that word, okay? So if in the word fiat in loose terms means the sum total means this. It's the equivalent of this. You know, you do all these actions and it's as if like you're doing exactly this. He didn't directly declare war, but he did it indirectly. And therefore he declared war by fiat. So fiat, you could substitute the word indirectly. So the king indirectly declared war against the colonies in this American Prohibitory Act.
Yeah, and so again, put yourself in their shoes at the time in this concept of allegiance and protection. For sure, if he's declaring them as open enemies, he's no longer protecting them, right? So by this act, he has removed his protection from the colonists. And remember, the concept of allegiance and protection, they were bound together. So as soon as you remove that protection, we are no longer no longer owe them allegiance, right?
That's right. In effect, we are no longer your subjects. You have thrown us off, and we are no longer a part of Great Britain, England. You know, we're no longer your subjects.
Yeah, and I mean King George III. I mean, he was just basically angry at us, you know, because we kept standing up for our rights, and he did, apparently doesn't like that. So, more and more he issued these different declarations. So, and then you can also, there's a couple other quotes I'm going to give you that shows that how the founders perceived this, right? The first is from a letter John Adams wrote to American, the general Horatio Gates. Mm-hmm. So in this, John Adams says, it throws 13 colonies out of his royal protection. It levels all distinctions and makes us independent in spite of our supplications and entreaties. It may be fortunate that an act of independency should come from the British Parliament rather than the American Parliament. I'm sorry, rather than the American Congress.
Thank you, Jason. And a couple of takeaways there. It says, in spite of our supplications and entreaties, the actual definition of supplication is almost like a begging prayer, a prayer of, I'm begging you, Lord. And the word Lord means, you know, a religious connotation, but it also means Lord as a monarchical reference. So they were basically praying and seeking in most humble ways, but the king said, I don't care. You're going to do what I say. You're going to pay my taxes, which is unfair. And here's another thing, okay, that John Adams did what I have referenced to on social media and Jason and I have referenced in this podcast is called connecting the dots. Okay, John Adams recognized that, hold on here, King George III, how do you say it in Spanish? El tres.
El tercero.
El tercero. I probably said it incorrectly, but you know.
Me too, probably.
So, I mean, he basically connected the dots and said, hey guys, he has basically declared war on us and we're no longer his subjects. So he basically fiat set them free, fired them as subjects and said, you're on your own. And not only that, I'm going to declare war on you. So you have got to be paying attention because we've got to connect these dots. And little by little, our freedoms and liberties are being taken away from us. And toujours prêt, we always ready. It's a motto of one of the army divisions.
Armored Cavalry Regiment, right?
Toujours prêt. Yeah, bravo. Yeah. You got to be ready, okay? Patriotism, Jason and I did what I thought was a great episode on being a citizen and, you know, being a patriot. And it was a lot of Jason's work, by the way, in his writings, which is one of the inspirations for why I you know, why I'm participating here, but we have to be vigilant. Okay. That, back in the day we had stoves where there was a pilot light. Okay. There was a little tiny flame that was, always being fed by natural gas. Okay. And nowadays it's mostly electric, you know, or you have a little battery that goes click, 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 makes a spark and it goes on by its own if you have one of those. But it was a pilot light.
A water heater still have pilot lights, I think.
Well, there we go. Yeah. You know, you should always have that pilot light on of vigilance. Always vigilant. Okay. Jason's been doing this for 16 plus years, which thank God for him and other great patriots like him. And so he can be there to rally us and a clarion call to fight and reclaim, you know, constitutional governance and our liberties and our freedoms, which we're being oppressed today. You're standing up, and we'll get further on some call to actions later at the end of this. But but understand, just like Adam said, hey, you know, to General Horatio Gates, it basically they're, you know, setting us free, throwing us off despite our supplications, and they want to continue to not only to oppress us, but to declare war against us by fiat. So, yeah,
in fact, in the Declaration of Independence later on towards the end, they actually talk about the supplications they made. It says, in every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. So they talk about, hey, look, we tried to do this. We tried to maintain the status quo and just preserve our rights, and it didn't happen. So, and then the other, I mentioned there's another quote. Thomas Jefferson talks in his notes on the Continental Congress. Mm-hmm. He has a couple notes. One of them says that the question was not whether by a declaration of independence we should make ourselves what we are not, but whether we declare a fact which already exists.
There you go, so connecting the dots.
Yeah, he's saying that, you know, we're not declaring independence to make ourselves independent. We are declaring, hey, by his actions, the king has already made us independent. Mm-hmm. And so, and then he also goes on to say that as to the king, we had been bound to him by allegiance, but that this bond was now dissolved by his assent to the late act of parliament by which he declares us out of his protection. So again, to the colonists, this was a concept of allegiance and protection. He took us out of his protection, and so they therefore no longer owed allegiance to them. They don't owe allegiance, and they're independent. They're on this other continent. So what do they do with that? So consequently,
as a takeaway, to say it was a revolutionary war is a misnomer.
Yeah.
To be more accurate, it's a war of independence.
That's exactly right.
Because the word revolutionary, it makes me think of Chavez or, you know, some Cuban dictator, you know, that's what revolutionary and Marxist ideologies. But when you think of war of independence, it tells you a different story and it paints a different picture, a more accurate picture of what the American character is. In fact, here's a takeaway about what is the American character. We love freedom. We love liberty. We love individual sovereignty. And we are willing and ready to fight for it.
That's exactly right. That's great. Great stuff. So from their own words, we can see the founders did not consider the first war with Britain to be a revolutionary war in which one group seeks to cast off an existing form of government and create a new government or assume control of an existing government. That's not what they were doing. History tells us that the colonists did not seek to overthrow their king. It's just a fact. However, once they were declared out of his protection, they vigorously defended their newfound independence that was basically thrust upon them. Therefore, this war, it cannot be considered a revolutionary war or a war to gain independence, but rather a war to retain the independence. Again, that was thrust upon them.
Their newfound independence, that's right.
Yeah, so this now provided them a new perspective on sovereignty. Because now who is sovereign, right? If the king is not sovereign, who's sovereign? Well, again, the Declaration of Independence is such a beautiful document. It was written, I mean, the framers were just absolute geniuses. And they put this in there for us to reference. So in the second paragraph, they say who is sovereign. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So the government's powers come from the consent of the governed. So it's us, it's mankind. We've always been sovereign, right? We just didn't embrace them. We didn't fight for them until, you know, recently in our history. So it's not something that's new to us.
Right. So a little story for those of you who know me, you probably heard this story before. I'm sure it's fictitious, but I'm sure this has happened before. And this story is akin to Americans today. Okay. There's a man who's coming to the United States from a foreign country, and it's just him. He's on a boat. It's a couple weeks. He worked very, very hard to come to the United States on this ship, and he could barely afford the price of the journey across the Atlantic Ocean. Okay. In fact, he couldn't even afford, he thought, the price of food on the ship. So he actually brought food with him so he could ration it out these 2 weeks. And so once he got on the ship, every day he'd see people coming out of the restaurants in the ship and just laughing and enjoying themselves after, you know, spending time together and having a meal in a restaurant. And he did that day after day after day on this 14-day trip. And on the 13th day, about the last day, one of the stewards on the ship said, Mr. Smith, okay, I'll just say Mr. Smith. He said, why haven't we seen you in any of the restaurants? Why haven't you enjoyed the time or the meals with us? And he said, well, I can't afford it. And he said, but sir, the price includes the meals, okay? Our Constitution includes our freedom, our ability to stand up and fight and say, hey, you are oppressing us. These are unconstitutional edicts. Stop it.
Yeah.
We have the right to gather. We have the right for religious exercise of our beliefs. We have the right to bear arms and so on. So just like this man didn't know that the meal was included in the price, okay, a lot of us, you know, have to be reminded that, hey, liberty includes a lot more than we've been enjoying. And the price was paid in blood and treasure by the men and women in our nation's history.
Yeah.
Some have continued to pay more recently. And you know what? We need to be vigilant today.
Yeah. In fact, even more fundamentally, it's like Thomas Jefferson says, the God who created it, or when God created it, gave us life, he gave us liberty at the same time. So it's this concept of liberty and even sovereignty, you know, the ability to do what we please and to create the governments we want. We've had that all along. We just didn't to fight for it. We didn't embrace it until, the War of Independence. So that leaves the question. So if we collectively, we the people are sovereign, which we are, what does it mean to say that our state is sovereign? State sovereignty, what does that mean? Or what does national sovereignty mean? Well, if we, as we talked in the Declaration of Independence, if government can only operate through the consent of the governed, we are essentially giving a limited loan of specific authorities to our governments, whether it's state or federal government, and they can only do that because we've allowed them to do that. So we're essentially loaning them some of our sovereignty in order to govern, right? For us to be able to govern ourselves. But we always have to remember we can always take those things back as well. These things are enumerated, right? They are they're specific. They're discrete things that we've given them. And case in point, Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution lists the 17 or 18 things that our federal government, our Congress, is allowed to make laws on, and only those things. Anything else that they do, any other laws that they make or enactments that they make that are outside of those things are unconstitutional. So it's essentially the government is an extension of the will of the people, because we are the sovereigns. We've just extended our sovereignty to them for limited things. So to kind of wrap up, we want to talk about some takeaways, things that you want to take away for action. the very first thing that you want to understand is that we can only govern through active involvement. You know, I find myself saying it a lot, but you know, our Constitution is only a document. It cannot defend itself. And so we have to be actively doing our part in order to make sure that that document is enforced, and it's up to us, not anybody else. So having said that, who is responsible for everything that does or doesn't happen in this nation, whether we like it or not? We are, right? If something is not going right, if people are elected officials are doing unconstitutional things,
that's right.
If they're ignoring their or dishonoring their oath to support and defend the Constitution, it's our fault. If we don't like something, we can't blame the government. The government's only there because we allow them to be at any given time. So we have to say, look, it's my fault. If anything's happened, it's my fault. We each have to take individual responsibility. Mm-hmm. And don't just assume that you have to do the. That's the other thing. You don't just assume that you have to do everything that the government tells you to do, because as we just said, there's very limited things that they're allowed to do. And if they are stepping outside of their bounds, that doesn't mean that you have to do them just because they're the government. No, the remedy is for you to say, no, we're not going to do that because we didn't authorize you to make laws to that effect. So don't just roll over anytime the government tells you to do something. As Matt said earlier, always question. I mean, you should always question.
Right.
We don't want to teach people what to think. We want to teach them how to think and how to solve problems, because it's not the government's job to solve our problems. It's ours. And so if you don't like something, fix it. You're in charge. You, Matt, me, all of us, we're in charge, so we can fix it.
And to that point, we are the Patriot Coalition Live. This is a daughter organization of Patriot Coalition. That's live, which means we're speaking to you live. Often, Jason, for the past 16 years, has been speaking to organizations, and he wrote down a lot of his thoughts and treatises and essays on liberty, freedom, the Constitution. You know, patriotcoalition.com is a great treasure trove of those works of Jason, by the way. But in terms of calls to action, this is what we've said in previous episodes of Patriot Coalition Live, is get 10 to 20 people together and work towards, and if there's something that you want changed, okay, talk to your congressman, your legislator, your senator. I've already taken personal actions myself, and Jason and I are still talking about this, but one of the things that, I'm going off script here, Jason, warning, but some great ideas are coming, I think, is that one of the things that Jason and I still need to talk about is, if you are hearing this, and a lot of people who are listening to these are close friends who are already affiliated in some way with, you know, sharing information with us or part of the actual Patriot Coalition, is they're already engaged. We need to get organized.
Yeah.
Meaning that one of the pressing items right now are these mandatory vaccines that are coming. So what I've already reached out to some people in my school district, the superintendent, I've already reached out to a congressman, and we're going to do more work. So if you are interested in making a difference, your voice matters, contact us. Go to patriotcoalitionlive.com. Okay. Patriotcoalitionlive.com. Send us an email, say, count me in, you know, send me. That's a biblical reference, by the way, send me. And it's not going to be anything substantial, but when we're organized, the sum of the whole is far greater than the sum of the individual parts. We're going to do things very simply, like, hey, call your congressman, and we're going to do it. I live near Cape Canaveral in Florida. Jason lives in the great state of Texas. God bless Texas. Loving what you guys are doing and taking the lead in America. Definitely historic what you're doing in courts out of Texas. So if you guys are interested, this is a call to you listening, to you watching, to you who this has been shared to, send us an email. Okay, go to patriotcoalitionlive.com and just navigate the page and say, hey, you can leave your email, and we'll, you know, tell us kind of the area that you live so we can organize. And Florida and Texas are two places where Jason and I are obviously, because Texas is a big place. It's like five states. Okay, North Texas. Okay, so if you want to get involved, let us know. Because when we get just 10 or 20 people in a congressional district, for example, or calling on the superintendent, okay, I'm speaking in context right now of, you know, mandatory vaccines are on the way. And our last episode was about vaccines, which has been proven to be very popular because we have a lot of data there, and it hits home because a lot of these kids, and here's a statistic I just found out about that. Between the ages of 4 and 14 in the United States, a total of 44 children in the United States have died from COVID, okay? 350 million people. Now, every person that dies early is a tragedy. It's particularly tragic if it's a child. Now, should we administer 40 million vaccines to kids who aren't really in a major risk category? Okay, those are the unconstitutional edicts that we need to preempt. And that's where working together as Patriot Coalition, now Patriot Coalition Live, can make a difference. So, so anything you want to add to that, Jason, before we wrap up?
No, I think you did that great service. So that's good stuff.
I went off script, everybody, but you know, when you feel the fire, you gotta, you know, stoke the flame.
That's right.
So great work today, Jason. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com for more information. patriotcoalitionlive.com. Your support is a big help to us. I'll go to patriotcoalitionlive.com/support to help us out. You can subscribe to the Patriot Coalition Live wherever you get your podcasts, places like Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Please give us a 5-star rating at those places. Some podcasts don't allow ratings, some do. Please go to the ones that do. If you have any questions or topics you'd like us to address, you could send us a note on the website and share it with Jason and me. Thanks again, everyone. We will see you here next time.
Thanks, everyone. See you later.